Frank, what was your combat flying, you know, more advanced flying when you got in the combat territory?
Well, I went through gunnery training at Nellis in Las Vegas, and I broke an eardrum while I was dive bombing there. So they grounded me and sent me to the Philippines on the boat, 21 days. I'll never forget that one. I don't know how the hell you ever stood that in the Navy, but I got to the Philippines, and I finally was able to get back on flying status, and I joined a fighter squadron there flying F-80s. Under a Tuskegee Airman, Major Charles McGee, who was one of the best leaders I've ever met.
He's been here a number of times.
I know he has. He's a great guy.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I probably owe my flying career to Major McGee because the doctor kept saying, oh, your ear doesn't look like it'll ever work to me. You only got one ply in your eardrum. Yeah, I know we can't do anything. So I finally went down to Major McGee, and I said, please, sir, will you take me up from there? So he said, let's go right then. He took me up and re-depressurized the 33 and everything and came back and landed, went back to the doctor. He looked and said, oh, that ear hadn't changed. I said, but I'd just been flying. He said, what do you mean? I told you not to. I said, I know, but Major McGee let me. So that's how I got back on flying status.
Well, so how long before each of you started to move out toward astronaut stuff? How long were you in the fleet and how long were you flying Air Force?
Well, in my case, when the NASA decided to put people up into space back in 1958, NASA went out and asked the Air Force and the Navy for people that had certain qualifications, had 1,000 hours of jet time by that time, were graduate of a test pilot school, had an engineering degree, were not over 6 feet, and not over the age of 35. And so both the Air Force and the Navy submitted about 140 names. I was one of those names, and I was in the first 40 group, and so NASA invited the first 40 in 1958 to go to Washington to hear this new thing called Man in Space. And they talked about putting a spacecraft on top of a Atlas booster that was at that time blowing up every other day down at Cape Canaveral. And so we went through that, and then I ended up getting to be one of the first 33 out of the first 40 to go. And so John Glenn and I together, as a matter of fact, went out to Albuquerque for our physicals to join this new thing called astronauts. And I flunked. So... So Glenn and the other six guys got in, and I went back to the test center. I was testing the Phantom at the time, the F-4 Phantom, if you remember that airplane. And so for another 2 years, I was there until NASA suddenly wanted the second group. And the Navy asked me, do you want to go back and try again? Because the Navy didn't know that I failed the physical. And so I said, sure, and I went back, and this time I was examined by the Air Force doctors who had no idea that I had anything wrong with me.
What is he saying about Air Force doctors,
you're lucky,
Frank?
You're lucky the doctors didn't ask me.
So you made it on the second shot.
Yeah, I made it a second time.
Right. Frank, what about you? When did you make the slide over?
Well, to be honest with you, Jim... grew up building rockets and then talking about the moon. I've never been, and I'm not now, a space cadet. I was teaching thermodynamics at West Point when they launched Sputnik. And all of a sudden it became clear to me that in this Cold War, there was going to be hopefully that we would be competitive in the area of space. So when I left West Point, I applied for the test pilot school and was accepted. And then after I graduated from that, I stayed on, and we started a postgraduate school there. And the second call came out for the second group, and I joined. I put in my application, was accepted then.
Now let me go back. When you just mentioned Sputnik, how many of you here today were born or after 1960? After 1960. Maybe a little short background. But Frank just mentioned Sputnik. You know, we're used to having thousands of satellites zooming around the planet these days. and there are about 1,100 of them are active today. And, of course, we couldn't live without them, 24-7 every second. We can't live without these satellites. But until 1957, there was no such thing as a man-made satellite, and it was the Russians, the Soviets, who put that Sputnik, they called it, up there. It was 184 pounds, was a little bigger than a big beach ball, but they didn't talk or anything. It just beeped its way around the world. But the Soviets were proud of that. They said, we beat the U.S. into space. And what Frank just said, now it's competitive. It's a national security question. And we had to ramp up really fast to become competitive with the Russians. And so how quickly did you all think that could happen, given that the Russians were ahead of us, Jim?
Well, I have looked at that technology. I at one time wanted to become a rocket engineer, so in 57 when Sputnik went up, you know, I thought, didn't we have all those Germans down here, you know, and what happened to us? And well, we tried to put up a satellite.
The Navy tried to put up a satellite.
Yeah, the Navy, I agree, the Navy tried to put up a satellite, but for civilian control.
A level?
Yeah, it rolled off the launch pad, still beeping, by the way. So finally we had to gather again.
The Germans put it up.
We were second best.
The Germans put it up finally.
Well, the Germans we brought came over. Von Braun and his Pina Mundi team came over and finally built. Used a booster finally that was being designed for military, and at that time we thought that this would be a civilian program. So the Vanguard rocket was essentially a civilian rocket that was being put up by the Navy, but then we switched to the military and we put up Explorer 1, and that Explorer 1 was the one that discovered the Van Allen belts actually. Around the Earth, and so we did get something accomplished there.
On May 25th, 1961, President Kennedy, and it was only a few months after he was inaugurated, gave a speech to Congress and the country, and he challenged the country and said, our goal is to land a man on the moon in this decade, and as Wally Schirra was fond of saying, and returning him safely to Earth being the most important part of that challenge from President Kennedy. But there was the challenge beginning in 61, and then we started with the program. So it was Mercury, 6 one-man flights, Gemini, 11 two-man flights, and then how many, 12? 12 Apollo?
12?
Yeah. So I think so, 12. Three-man flights. So how confident were you, Frank, when Alan Shepard went off, that this was going to really turn into something?
Well, I was on a treadmill taking my physical to join NASA when we stopped everything and watched Shepard fly. And I wasn't at all confident we were able to beat the Russians at that point, but that was the main reason I was there. And so I was, that's what I can say, I was... reasonably certain that I never felt that we would be beaten by the Russians. And I wanted to determine, I think Jim and I both did, to do everything we should to make sure we weren't. And we weren't alone. Everybody in the country, everybody in the program was totally organized and oriented.
What was the mood of the country then? I know we're talking like 1961.
Well, I think it's kind of bad. I think the fiasco Cuba just passed, it appeared that we were second rate to the Russians because they had put someone already up into space and orbited somebody, and all we had done by the time when President Kennedy made that commitment was a 15-minute suborbital flight of Alan Shepard. So it appeared that we were second best, and I really think that President Kennedy, with maybe the consultation of his science advisors, put that in, whether he really thought that we were going to be able to land on the moon by the end of the decade is probably doubtful. But he had to say something to the American people to give them confidence and give them hope of what we can do in technology to be a leader in the world.
Well, that was really a bold decision because his science advisor, Wieser, was against it.
Yeah.
Kennedy made it on, and I have to hand it to him because I think that was a very courageous decision.
What was the mood of the whole country about the space program? What do you recall the mood being?
Well, my impression was, and Jim can speak, but was that everybody was in favor of it. It was a very divided country in the late 60s. But everybody, the competitive spirit of the American people, almost everybody wanted to beat the Soviets to the moon. And everywhere you went, I can remember we used to tour factories. We were, I don't know if you're with me or not, Jim, we were going through an autopilot factory in Denver, Colorado, Titan II Autopilot. And a great big lady there in the midnight shift grabbed me and almost smothered me and said, "Don't you worry, we'll beat them. I'm doing my best." Yeah. That was, to me, typified the mood of the country.